In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Yeah, let's talk movies. Alan Adams from The Main Edge joins us here in studio. Hello, sir.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Pretty good, thanks. How's your Monday?
It's pretty good. Busy.
Yeah.
Been busy, but that's okay.
You did an improv show last night, another Ready, Set, Go at Penobscot Theater.
I did. It was, it was on the set of the excellent Becoming Dr. Ruth. You got 1 week left, peeps. So if you haven't seen it yet, you really ought to get out there and check it out because it is just exceptional. It was myself, Jen Shepherd, straight off performance of Becoming Dr. Ruth. Our friend and cohort Jason Preble, Chicago-based improviser Shelby Burton, and of course Larence Fingerhut on the keys, and we improvised just one hell of a weird play there on that stage.
Well, on that interesting set, you didn't have a lot of room to work.
It was very narrow, and we wound up with there were four of us, and that was that's about where you wanted to be. Like any more than that, for those who haven't seen it, it's a very elaborate set, but it's pushed very much forward in the space, and so it's not particularly deep. And if you're someone who occasionally likes to run around a little bit, it's not necessarily conducive to that sort of thing. But
right.
We navigated it quite nicely and had a really good time. It was pretty well attended, and everyone appeared to enjoy themselves. So that was nice. I'm trying to think what else. We're currently waiting on some news for our sweet little pooch Stella. She had her oncology checkup this past Friday.
Yeah.
Her initial the big one is still everything appears to be okay, but Sheridan and I had recently detected just a little tiny something on her leg, and so we asked them to look at it. And it turns out it was something that they wanted to remove and get a closer look at.
Yeah.
So but they did it right there. It was our oncologist was very optimistic and was just like, he was basically like, I don't even know how you caught it this early.
Wow.
So that's nice. But we're waiting to hear returns as far as the stuff is concerned. But she's doing well. She's got some staples in her little leg. It's not like any of this ever has ever changed any of her behaviors.
Right.
I mean, she's the same dog she's always been. And so, yes, we are optimistic, but at the same time, it's always a little worrisome when stuff like that pops up. But she's doing well, and she sends her best to you and Ginger and the whole crew.
Well, we send massive positive thoughts Stella's way for that as well. So we've got some movies to talk about. What'd you see?
We do. I saw three movies this weekend. We'll start with. There's a Netflix movie called Senior Year. It stars Rebel Wilson, it's a riff on the adult goes back to high school sort of subgenre of high school movies that we've seen upon occasion. Only this one, it's got a little bit of a twist because someone a month and a half away from graduation, winds up in a coma, and then wakes up 20 years later and is like, "I want to finish my senior year."
Okay.
And hijinks ensue.
Well,
that's pretty much it. It starts. We start in the year 1999. We have a young Australian girl named Stephanie who has just moved to the States. She's got some friends. They're a little weird, but she's got some friends. But all she wants is to be one of the popular kids.
Wait, Australian girl moves to the States. This is Greece.
It's not as far from Greece as you might think.
Oh, my.
You've got at least one high school kid who looks like a full-grown adult. There's that.
There you go.
But she decides she's going to make it her mission to become popular. And so she devotes her energies. She becomes captain of the cheerleading squad. She starts dating the coolest boy in school, et cetera, et cetera. Everything's looking up for Stephanie until her rival, Tiffany, arranges things so that there's a terrible accident during a cheer routine at a pep rally.
Oh, no.
The intent was to humiliate young Stephanie. But instead, she winds up, you know, in a coma for 20 years and then wakes up still thinking that this all happened yesterday. Mm. But, you know, she's now a 37-year-old woman. Everyone she knew has grown up. Well, Rich, she still believes very firmly that the be-all and end-all of her dreams is to be the cheerleading captain, be the most popular girl in school, et cetera, et cetera. And, well, she goes back to school and to try to do just that. I could go into the specifics if you want me to, but honestly, man, like, look, it's not even that it's a bad movie, and it's got a really kind of a stacked cast. I mentioned Rebel Wilson, but Sam Richardson's in this movie, Chris Parnell, just a really wonderful collection of very talented comedic actors. I don't know, once you get past the sort of novelty of the twist on the conceit, they don't really do anything with it. It just kind of sits there there are some laughs to be had, but for the most part, I found myself asking some ethical questions with regard to what's going on in this. Because, you know, it's like, you know, because obviously her friends grew up and work at the school. Like, one of them's the principal and one of them's the librarian, because, of course. But, you know, the librarian, still into her. He was into her when they were in high school, still into her, and is sort of making moves. And it's like, is this okay? Mm. Like, yeah. I mean, you know, yes, obviously an adult chronologically, but intellectually and emotionally, still a teenager, still enrolled in high school as a student. Is it okay for the librarian to take a student out on a date? It seems wrong. And yet this movie has zero interest in dealing with any of that. We're just supposed to just sort of accept that it's all okay. Again, there's more stuff that happens in this movie, but it doesn't matter. It's perfectly fine. It's one in a long line of perfectly fine Netflix comedies. It's not much more than just sort of like background noise, like, you know, like wallpaper or whatever.
Right.
But I mean, Netflix has made movies that are a lot worse than this. And, well, I mean, I suppose that's the tagline. Senior year, Netflix has made movies a lot worse than this.
A ringing endorsement from Alan Adams here on Pass the Popcorn. What's next?
Let's talk about this movie. I was actually kind of surprised by this movie because I basically watched it because I'm like, well, I probably need one more. it's a movie called Sneakerella.
Sneakerella
on Disney Plus. Yep. And it's what it sounds like. It is an adaptation of Cinderella revolving around sneaker culture.
All right.
I know. It sounds, and it's like, and it's gender swapped, so our hero is male rather than female. Stepfather, stepbrothers instead of stepmother,
okay.
Stepsisters. But yes, we have a young man named L who works at his family's sneaker store in Queens. He's an aspiring sneaker designer, something that his mother supported him in wholeheartedly, but he lost her. She passed away. And so he is operating under the care of his stepfather, Trey, who kind of hates the shoe business and basically wants to get out of it. And he's got two older and real just jerks for stepbrothers who their all-consuming desire is to move back to New Jersey, which that right there, it's like, really? Like, you're in New York City and you want to move back to Jersey? Like, come on. Like, but anyway, so L is you know, put upon. He basically has to stock the shelves and do all the grunt work around the shoe store. His dad tells him, okay, you need to have the store ready. I've got an important meeting. But L, along with his best friend Sammy, they're going to a sneaker drop. The brand new King Sixes are dropping.
Mm.
And so they go and stand in line outside the store. They wind up encountering a young lady named Kira, who allows them to sort of cut in line with her. But they're still too late. They can't get the shoes. But Kira and Elle kind of hit it off. And so they're like, so he takes her on this whirlwind exploration of the magical world of Queens, including a visit to the community garden run by the mysterious and benevolent gardener, Gustavo.
Okay.
And Gustavo turns out to be, well, yeah, I mean, if there is such a thing as a fairy gardener, that's basically what we get. Anyway, turns out Kira is actually the daughter of Darius King, played by John Sally.
Wow.
Like the John Sally.
Wow.
Who is a former NBA star and now sneaker mogul. And so he runs like King Sneakers. That's his thing. And so that sort of turns into a whole thing where, you know, Kira doesn't know how to get in touch with Elle because he had to leave so abruptly. And so, but he and Elle and Sammy try to plot a way to get to this, to the gala that is being held in advance of SneakerCon. I know it sounds ridiculous. And he goes to the gala and, you know, everyone's like, ooh, because he wears his own custom made shoes. And everyone's like, ooh, what's up with those shoes? And then he has to leave at midnight because that's what you have to do when the story is happening. And, well, Richie leaves a shoe behind because that happens. That's what happens.
Gotta do it.
I know whenever I'm out and about with my lace up high tops, they fall off my feet all the time. And then there's a whole thing where it's like, oh, we have to track down the designer of the shoe, and we have to, you know, the story. Like, I don't need to tell you the story of Cinderella. Like, you've been there. Like, there are some variations on the theme, but it's pretty much the same thing. This is a musical. Features a number of original songs, as well as actually pretty lovely cover of A Dream is a Wish Your Heart Makes, which was from the original Cinderella. Mm-hmm. I was kind of surprised by how charmed I was by this movie. The performers are very good. Like it's very sweet. They're very young and earnest. The music is solid. It's enough of a twist on the classic foundation where it keeps your interest a little bit. I found the gender swapping to be interesting. I'm sure there are folks out there who are actively complaining about it because there's nothing that certain types of people love complaining about more.
Right.
Even John Sally was pretty good. He definitely not an actor, but he was pretty good. And it was just, I don't know, there's something to be said for a nice family-friendly kind of movie. Like kids, like families will be able to enjoy this movie together. And look, if nothing else, it beats the hell out of that jukebox musical abomination Cinderella that Amazon trotted out last year. Yeah. You know, like, I mean, it's miles ahead of that movie. And so, if you love this story and you'd like to see it explored in a slightly different way, well, yeah, Sneakerella, why not?
All right. And what's her third film? Uh-oh.
It hurts me to have to talk about this in the way that I'm about to. So I saw Firestarter.
Okay.
And apologies to the big boss. I know it's not your fault. look, I recognize that when you are as prolific as Stephen King, like your work is going to fall into tiers. Like that's just how it works. Like all things are not equal when you've written, you know, three books, let alone, you know, 30 or 60 or however many we're talking about here. Also worth noting, adaptations of those works also fall into tiers. For those who are unfamiliar, Firestarter was first made into a film back in 1984, starring young Drew Barrymore in the lead. It held, I believe the premiere was held right here in Bangor.
At the Bangor Opera House. Yeah.
I know this not least because my mother-in-law, who was a colleague of Mr. King's at Hamden Academy, attended.
Oh, wow.
So she was, she was there. But that movie was not great. This movie is better than that movie, but it is also not great.
Okay.
I watched it, and I will say, I can't speak to the theatrical experience. I did watch it because it was a day and date release. I watched it on Peacock. For those who are unfamiliar, we've got a young lady named Charlie McGee who's living with her parents in an unnamed town, although we do see police cars with Lewiston written on them. And I'm like, oh, are we in Lewiston? And then it turns out it might be in Massachusetts, but I'm choosing to believe that it's in Maine.
Sure.
She's struggling in school. Like the kids are, you know, think she's weird. her parents are kind of overprotective, and the reason for that is, well, we learn it very, very early on. Even as a baby, young Charlie could set stuff on fire by thinking about it, and that's well, you know, that's something that parents probably struggle to deal with.
Yes,
you know, and so she's growing up. She's you know, she's a kid. She's 8 or 9 years old, and she's trying to get a hold, get a handle on these feelings that she's having. Both of her parents, who were subjects of weird experiments by a shadowy, maybe government organization called DSI, they have abilities of their own. Her dad, Andy, played by Zac Efron, we've reached the point in life where Zac Efron is playing dad roles, and so I'm just going to crumble into dust as soon as we get off the air. her dad has telepathic powers. Her mom has telekinetic powers. But Charlie comes by these abilities. You know, she was born with these powers rather than granted with them, and so she is a subject of great interest to the powers that be at DSI. So much so that the new person in charge reaches out to someone simply named Rainbird, played by actually probably the best part of the movie, played by Michael Gray Eyes. He is also gifted with some of these talents. He's an assassin of sorts, and they send him out to take the girl and get rid of the parents. And then off we go. I'm not going to go any farther than that. I don't want to spoil any of the any of what happens in this movie. Not least because, well, there's not a lot that happens in this movie. And if I start spoiling stuff, it's just like, well, now what are we doing? Like, he basically just recited the entire plot. Look. I had high hopes. I wanted this movie to be good. I was excited. I'm always excited for a new King adaptation, especially these days. I feel like there have been a lot more hits than misses in recent years. Mm. That wasn't always the case. We've had some pretty unfortunate stretches when it comes to adaptations of Mr. King's work, but I feel like we're really in a bit of a fallow period as far as that goes. Like, it's really like things are really really popping, and so I'm like, oh, you know, Keith Thomas, who made a very good, very creepy, religious tinged horror movie called The Vigil. That was his last film before this one. I'm like, okay, like the pieces are in place. And then I watched it, and it was just, God, it's not even that it was bad. It's just that it was dull.
No.
You know, and that's something that almost never happens with Mr. King's work. It's, you know, regardless of how you feel about it, like whether it's your taste or not, like one thing you can rarely say about his books, the movies derived from his books, they're never boring.
Right.
And this movie was kind of boring. Mm. And, you know how hard it is to be, to have a movie about a kid who could start fires with her mind that's only an hour and a half long. Do you know how hard it is to make something like that boring? And yet, here we are. Oof. Look, the effects were okay. Like, I think the biggest issue I had with it is it felt kind of rushed and maybe slapped together a little bit. I wonder if there were some production issues that arose, or some sort of deadlines that suddenly, you know, crept up. It feels like almost like you got like 85% of the way there, and then for whatever reason, you really just had to really just burn through that last 15%. And so the ultimate result is a movie that doesn't really hold together. You know, and it's rare in this day and age, but I almost wish there were more. Huh. Like, I feel like if we had had another 15 or 20 minutes of development of, you know, a little backstory on our bad guys, because they're so faceless in so many ways, like just something, anything to just give us a little bit more insight into the characters, because everybody just kind of read as a little bit flat. And for the most part, the actions being undertaken didn't always make a ton of sense. Like, you didn't necessarily understand why people were doing what they were doing beyond that sort of overarching, like, gotta capture the girl who starts fires. And then again, it feels particularly weird sitting here and talking and talking about this. I know. And like, and you know, look, he's a smart guy. He knows.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just, you know, I'm always eager in my anticipation for a new King product.
You're being stalked over your right shoulder, Al. Do you see it out there?
Oh, I do. Get out of here. Stay out of my house.
Well, I would say the groundhog seemed entranced by the sound of your voice.
Well, I get that a lot.
Groundhog won't come into your house. They just, you know, will dig under it.
You know what? If it, you know, nobody, Carrie, come on, man. I'm trying to be threatening here. Firestarter, it's not what I wanted. No. It's not what you want.
It's missing a spark, you're saying.
Oh my God, it's like lukewarm at best.
Oh, all right. Yeah, you got to call him like you see him.
You know, I gotta. It doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
Sometimes it feels great. But sometimes it does not feel good, and this is one of those times.
Alan Adams talking movies here on Downtown. Thank you, Al.
My pleasure.
We'll catch you again on Wednesday.
Thank you.
Lest that groundhog get you on the way out.
Steer clear of me, man.